Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a quick digest of compelling legal issues and practical insights delivered to you in less than 20 minutes.
This is Danielle Oakes, co-chair of Ogletree's Technology Practice Group, also known as the Tech Place, where we provide labor and employment legal services to tech employers and users of technology in the workplace. On today's Tech Place Tickler, we're going to talk about some of the challenges involved in managing the workplace in a global pandemic environment. Today's focus will be on business immigration in the tech place. I have with me Jackie Maroney, a leader of the firm's immigration practice group. Her practice focuses primarily on representing technology companies, and she represents some of the largest and most sophisticated technology companies in the world. Jackie, can you give us an overview of what constitutes business immigration and how it's different from other forms of immigration?
Great. Thank you, Danielle, for inviting me to participate today. It's a pleasure to be here with you. At Ogletree Deacons, all we do is the business immigration side. So that's half of what goes on in the whole immigration world. So some firms will focus on family-based immigration. That's when, let's say, there's a U.S. citizen or a green card holder who's sponsoring a spouse or a parent or a child to immigrate into the United States. That's one type of immigration, and that's not what we do here at Ogletree. What we do at Ogletree is we represent employers, and we obtain temporary work visas and then permanent immigrant visas or green cards on behalf of that employer's workforce. My practice is focused on technology, and so what we do and what we see is we represent companies who are getting those H-1B work visas for highly skilled workers, typically engineers, scientists, researchers, roles like that. And we get their temporary work visa. We maintain that because that does require extensions. And then, of course, we undertake the lengthy lawful permanent residence or green card process on behalf of those employees. Because for the company to maintain that worker in the U.S. workforce for more than, let's say, 6 years, the company does have to go forward with that lawful permanent residence or green card process. The other thing about that is the companies that we represent typically use this as a recruiting tool, and they say, hey, we will not only get you your work visa and take care of the cost with that, but we will also go forward and promptly seek your green card or your lawful permanent resident status. So that's what we do here at Ogletree. We have 250 people that just do business immigration, 90 attorneys, 180 paralegals, and then data analysts and developers who support us in the technology realm that we use to manage those immigration programs.
So, Jackie, you mentioned green cards and H-1B visas. Are these the primary sorts of visas you see in the tech place or technology workforce, or are there other kinds of visas that come across your desk?
So, Danielle, there's a whole alphabet soup, we call it work visas. The H-1B is really the workhorse of work visas. So those are going to be for highly skilled roles and what they call specialty occupations, meaning that the job requires not just any degree, but a degree in directly related field. So those are always going to be available to engineers, let's say, scientists, researchers, analysts of certain types, roles like that. That's where we see companies really sponsoring workers for the work visas. And typically we do see that under the H-1B visa category. In addition to the H-1B, there are other parts of the alphabet that we represent and maintain on behalf of employers. One category would be special visas under treaties. So the United States has treaties with certain countries. So Canada and Mexico under NAFTA, those workers or those professional workers are eligible for a TN visa. Citizens of Australia eligible for a visa very similar called an E3 that's only for Australians. And then there's some other treaties as well that can get in workers, highly skilled workers or managers or executives under those treaties. In addition to the treaty category, if the U.S. employer has a foreign parent, subsidiary, or affiliate, then we can use a visa called the L1 to bring in workers from those foreign companies into the United States. But once here, they can only work for that family of companies. They are not eligible to move from company to company in the U.S. market. So I would say, you know, with what we do, the primary visas would be H-1Bs, then the L1s for the intercompany transfers, and then the treaty visas are going to be a much smaller part of the workforce, maybe 3% of what we do.
Are there particular countries that tech workers appear to immigrate from more than others?
Well, our clients tend to be global companies, so they are bringing people from all over the world. And when they come in from all over the world, they're typically coming in on that L1 intercompany transfer visa. A larger part than the L would be folks who come to the United States to get their master's degree. They graduate from a U.S. university with a master's or a PhD, and then they enter the U.S. workforce as a local hire. Those are going to be typically H-1B visa workers. And the majority of those engineers that we see coming into the tech industry are going to be country of birth India, followed by country of birth China. And then I would say sort of the rest of the world. So normally what we see is country of birth India and then China and then the rest of the world. And that is why there's a lengthy queue or backlog of folks applying for the green card from those countries. So if you're country of birth India and China, there's a pretty long line for the green card. And if you're from the rest of the world, then actually the line is much shorter. And that's just based on what we see as coming into the United States, those highly skilled workers and engineers, and where they happen to be coming from.
I understand that there's a temporary ban limiting business immigration to the U.S. in light of the pandemic. What's the status of that ban? And can you tell us a little bit about it?
With the pandemic, there have been a number of new challenges that employers are facing and also employees that are holding those temporary work visas. They're facing a number of challenges, just like the rest of America. What we have seen recently was the president issued an executive order on April 22nd. And there was a lot of curiosity or interest in what the executive order was going to say, because the president had previously tweeted that there was going to be a shutdown of immigration into the United States. Pretty broad concept. What actually came out in the April 22nd executive order was much more limited in scope. And what came out is that for 60 days, there's going to be a ban on issuing green cards when those are applied for directly at the U.S. consulate outside of the United States. So one thing that's interesting is that is not something that tech companies do very often. It would be a very unusual circumstance for a tech company to sponsor a worker for that green card directly at the U.S. consulate outside of the United States. And the reason that doesn't happen very often is the typical path is that the tech company will bring the employee into the United States or onboard the person in the United States, either on the H-1B visa, maybe on the L visa, but they're in the United States on a temporary work visa. And then the company goes forward with that green card process or that immigrant visa. Same thing. Those terms can be used interchangeably here. So most people are in the United States when they go through this process. It's very rare and very unusual that an engineer or, you know, one of the other employees of the company would go through that process at the U.S. consulate abroad. So it doesn't really happen. So the impact of that particular function being suspended is having really zero impact on tech companies, or almost zero. Most of the companies we work with, the impact is either zero or almost zero. And I would add to that, that because of the health conditions, the U.S. consulates are closed for that type of regular business anyway. So even before the executive order, Danielle, no one was going to the U.S. consulates abroad to get any sort of visa because that regular business had been shut down earlier in March due to the pandemic.
So it sounds like there'll be little, if any, impact on the regular operations of tech business immigration. You also mentioned that this ban will only be in place for 60 days. Do you have a sense of when that 60 day starts and ends?
So it was effective immediately. So it's 60 days from April 22nd. And if the consulates start opening up before then, terrific. And if they do open up, then they would not open up for this particular line of business.
Does the ban impact visa holders who are already here working in the U.S. in any way?
Well, that executive order, which is shutting down that one thing, which is consular issuance of immigrant visas abroad, that is not going to impact anyone who is already physically in the United States, who already has their temporary work visa and is here in the United States. So there's no impact to those workers at this time.
What are the top three recommendations you have for employers during this pandemic in terms of their business immigration practices?
So there are a lot of challenges for employers right now during COVID-19, and there are also immigration issues that are presented. And what we've been trying to make sure is that our clients are aware of all those issues so that when things do pop up in their organization, they can spot that issue quickly. Some of the things that we see employers considering, not related to immigration, but just in general during the pandemic, anything that relates to a furlough, to a reduction in force, or to an across-the-board payroll reduction. for the whole workforce, those are all going to have immigration issues that need to be considered at their front end during the planning stages. So that's one bucket. Another bucket would be day-to-day business right now. So when workers started working from home, as possible or as many companies mandated, you know, that presents special immigration issues when it comes to H-1B work visa holders, because the H-1B authorizes work at a specific location. And so all of those things have needed to be worked through over the last month and over the next coming month. Who is working where, and is that already authorized by the H-1B work visa, or does another action need to be taken, such as posting this certain compliance notice called a labor condition application? You know, does that need to be reposted either electronically or at the work from home site? So these are sort of conversations that we're having with companies. That's one thing to be considered. One thing that I'll mention is that we have taken all this advice and counsel we've been doing surrounding the immigration issues in the pandemic, and we've compiled it all with tools and templates that employers can use. And we've published that under the section of our COVID-19 resources on ogletree.com. So there is one place, and it's really handy because everything is in that one place compiled together with the hyperlinks, and it's called Immigration Strategies for COVID-19. And in there, there's full advice and counsel on the work from home issue and how to handle the H-1Bs, furloughs, reductions in force, across the board payroll reductions, special issues with respect to I-9 and onboarding employees virtually during the pandemic. And it's all there with templates that you can use to execute the advice that's given. So that's one nice tool that's all in one place. So one thing I would say is be careful of compliance during the pandemic, and there are new or novel issues that perhaps the organization hasn't considered before. The second thing that I would say is that in the executive order on April 22nd, the president advised the leaders of Department of Homeland Security and the other agencies to report back on whether additional measures should be taken with respect to those temporary work visas. So there's no time given there. They're supposed to report back within 30 days. We might not hear anything back in 30 days, but there is the sense that something might be coming that would touch on a more wide-scale scope than the first executive order. Especially during an election cycle, that's something that could come, let's say, sometime this fall. So what we are doing with companies is taking a look at their normal priorities and their normal action items and evaluating if any of those need to be adjusted on a 30, 60, 90-day action plan. So, you know, if the company normally files extensions 4 months in advance, maybe we should do that 6 months in advance. Maybe we should do a full court press on the H-1B work visa extensions, make sure that we get as many of those in as possible in case there is some broader announcement that comes out in the fall. So we would encourage all of our companies to work with their counsel and take a look at the 30, 60, 90 day to see if there's anything that needs to be reprioritized. And then you gave me three things, Danielle. So the third thing I would say is that this is a high anxiety time for all employees, but certainly for those employees that are on work visas, even more so, especially when the Twitterverse sends messages out and the president is looking at protecting the U.S. workforce during the pandemic. So I would say it's important to make sure that employers and the immigration teams and the stakeholders communicate with the employees in a fair and honest way. So it's important that you don't make promises that you can't keep and that you just communicate honestly and say, hey, we saw the tweet. We're watching it very closely. We're committed to partnering with you and with the company to safeguard all of our employees, including our visa holders, you know, but don't make any promises that we can't keep. But I do think communication is important right now.
Thank you, Jackie. We appreciate you joining us for this Tech Tickler. We'll see you in the tech place.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes or through your favorite podcast service. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.